Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. And you know, we talk a lot about the regional programs, and you know, Maryland millions last week, and they got the Ohio people this week, and you know, go back to the end of the Presque Isle season. We had the 2-year-old races for Pennsylvania breds, and you know, the picking a program and picking a place to race. We say, you know, horses follow money, and you know, Pennsylvania, obviously, people are taking advantage of the opportunity to race in Pennsylvania and drop their foals.
Absolutely. And as you know, the great news that came out this week is that Pennsylvania is up 12.5% in mare's bred. When I looked at the number, because I did a report myself, I'm saying, how come we're only up 12.5%? Well, there was a mix-up with Uptown Charlie Brown. I looked at him. He had one mare bred. He actually had 73 mares bred. And they straightened that out. Apparently, there was a mix-up with the jockey club. So that was straightened out yesterday. So if you add his 72 on there, we're actually up 24%.
Wow.
Over last year. And actually, I think we're probably going to be up a little bit more than that when everything's said and done. But you're right. People are going to go where the program is the best. And I think one of the, you know, most important things is the collaboration we have with the horsemen groups at the racetracks in Pennsylvania. You know, they're very good about helping out the Pennsylvania program. And, you know, we paid out over $30 million 8 years in a row, and it looks like we're going to be at that number again this year. So a lot of good things happening in PA.
The advantage, you know, for those that, you know, that track this kind of information, and it's ebbs and flows. I mean, there's, you know, there's programs that, you know, that have had trouble. All you have to do is look at New Jersey. And whenever there's uncertainty, mare owners, breeders, whether they're breeding to race or breeding commercially, they're going to go where they can plan ahead. And nobody wants uncertainty. And you know, that really has been the continuity. And there were some, you know, there were some concerns about, you know, the money that comes toward the breeding and racing in Pennsylvania.
Those
fears were allayed, though, and you know, the state understands, Harrisburg understands the benefits of supporting the program, given what it does for the farm community and all the trickle down economies.
Correct. We 3 years ago we put the Racehorse Development Fund in a trust. The legislators put it in a trust. And so people are now confident that money is going to be there because, you know, like you said, you know, your commitment isn't for a year. Your commitment coming in is probably 5 or 6 years
mm-hmm.
of getting some, you know, some horses running. And, you know, you're seeing that with the new stallions that are coming into Pennsylvania. I mean, with Opportunity, Warriors Reward, Uptown Charlie Brown's doing fantastic. Uncle Lino, Peace and Justice. Dr. Solomon at Pin Oak Lane Farm just inked a contract for Normandy Invasion, so he'll be coming in. Another Tappet. So, you know, things when people are confident that, you know, program's on the right track, you know, you'll see that by, you know, the uptick in the, mare's bred and you know, owners coming in.
The Mid-Atlantic, we talked on a regular basis this summer and into the early fall with Alan Foreman and the match series. And we had a lot of conversations about Virginia and the reboot of racing there, and there's, you know, there's really kind of an intertwined network, really, for people that race in the Mid-Atlantic. I mean, with all the various program awards that breeders, and again, whether you breed to race or you breed to sell, you fold in Delaware certification and Virginia certification, and then if you dropped your foal in Pennsylvania, oh my God, I've said this a few times, you can literally win a purse, and all the awards could be 75% over and above what you won as a purse.
Right. I mean, you can look at that horse was bred by Beezy Patterson and Vicky Showy, Call Paul, who won the Delaware Certified Stake a few weeks back. Won a couple of stakes in Pennsylvania, PA bred. I mean, you can't ask for anything better.
Run down the awards. We haven't talked about this in a long time. What are the percentages and how are they structured?
Well, both breeders and owners benefit from the plan. Our breeder award for maiden races is 50%. Our breeder award, that's PA sired horses, 25% non-PA sired. So we're taking care of them too. Any other races, the breeder award, 40% PA sired, 20% for others. Owner bonuses up to 40% at Parks, and 20% at Penn, and 30% at Presque Isle. We have hundreds of restricted races every year. We just put in a waiver of maiden claiming. So any maiden, well, no, I'm sorry, not any maiden claiming, but at Penn, any maiden claiming race that's 25 or higher, you can waive the claim if you have a PA bred. At Parks, it's the maiden claiming 20, where you can waive the claim. What we wanted to do is we wanted to give our breeders an opportunity to get back some of that money that they put out and their hard-earned time and effort before their horse is eligible to be claimed. Because, as you know, in Pennsylvania, you have a decent Pennsylvania bred, boom, that sucker's gone.
we also have discussed, you mentioned Call Paul, who's competed at the highest level, but the string of Pennsylvania bred graded stake winners and Breeders' Cup runners and winners, the whole program has just gotten better and better given the quality of mares that the state has attracted, and these are successes that kind of feed on themselves. You mentioned Pin Oak. There's any number of of people that understand these dynamics and are going to take advantage. And that's why the mares are showing up. And it's a boon to the farm operators and the breeding operators.
Absolutely. I mean, we're breeding. We're seeing an increase in the number of foals and also an increase in the quality. I mean, we have Prince Lucky running tomorrow in the Bold Ruler. We have Mirth that's pre-entered in the Tillium Mare Turf. We have Daddy is a Legend, who ran a nice race yesterday, a tune-up for the Matriarch Stakes. So you're seeing this happen. Two Eclipse Award winners last year, Shamrock Rose and Unique Bella the year before, Finest City the year before that. So we're on a roll, and we're going to keep this train moving as best we can.
And I'm pulling up the list for those that haven't visited. For those of you that breed, go to pabred.com, and all the information's there. And there's a drop down of horses that and the money that they've made. And I'm going to use our friends the Ullwellings in the Midwest, Pumpkin Rumble. And Pumpkin Rumble came to Parks on Derby Cotillion Day and won the opportunity, the restricted PA race. He's made an additional $69,840 over and above or in addition to his winnings in the Midwest and up at Woodbine in open company stakes. And, you know, for those that don't seem to or don't want to appreciate what this money does, it's money that pays for mistakes and for horses that don't make it and for horses that get injured. And, you know, this money isn't restricted, you know, just to Pennsylvania. And the old Wellings are a great example. I mean, taking, you know, the money like this gets funneled back in new horses that they breed or that they buy. And that, you know, isn't restricted, you know, just to Pennsylvania. It's healthy for the whole industry.
Yep, absolutely. You know, you have a PA bred who, you know, wins a couple of races and does okay after that. I mean, that horse is making over $100,000 in PA.
Well, you talked about the new stallions and the breeding season coming up. If you want to go through and take a look at just all the opportunity to make a decision, and what's the best way, Brian, for people to, you know, to get in contact? I mean, in some cases, they may not have relationships with some of the farms. Is there somebody that helps among the your staff and the PA breeders staff to help people, you know, match their mares with a place to board?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we're in the process now putting together the next stallion and boarding farm directory for 2020. So in that, and that'll be online and also go out in the Blood Horse across the 10 states, Mid-Atlantic states, Florida, Kentucky, and Ontario. That'll have farms in there that are looking for mares to come in and spend their time, become a PA bred in foal in Pennsylvania. You'll have the list of the stallions that are available in Pennsylvania. And, you know, my staff is always willing to help out. We have a couple of great people on the staff, Jennifer Poorman and Wendy Graham, who are always there to answer questions and point people in, you know, in direction and that they want to go.
Well, and before I let you go, how did you make out this year with the brighter your brighter stable moniker? I think I saw maybe not. I thought I saw a horse of yours fairly recently. No.
Yeah. Well, a horse that was claimed from us that is back in on Saturday. So she was off for a few months, but hopefully she'll break her maiden and I'll get that 50% the jump start. So I'll get that 50% bonus. So
I love it. I love it. Brian, I appreciate it, and continued success to the breeding community in Pennsylvania. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take it easy, Steve.
Brian Sanfratello, PABred.com. And the money is, you know, it is bonus. As somebody that's bred just one, you know, we got the one horse that we bred, and New York bred, you aren't going to necessarily, finance your operation, but it really helps. It fixes and patches up spots, you know, horses that didn't make it. You know, we tried to breed. We had some very bad luck. I mean, lost two foals, two live foals that didn't make it. But you still, you know, you carry the mare for the year while they're in foal, and it's a hard enough game. But you know, there's some ways you can, you know, take the some of the edge off and try to stay on an even footing. We're going to stay here, in fact, for the next 45. Jeff Siegel standing by. And last week at the end or over the weekend, I sent out those links to the Breeders' Cup section at xbtv.com. Just a invaluable resource as you prepare for your Breeders' Cup decisions. And Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today, Steve?
I'm good. I'm good. How many replays have you watched since last week?
A lot. You know, it's like preparing for the Super Bowl here. You got a week or two to prepare, and you know, once you get to the big game, you better be ready. So now is a good time to do all the research and watching all the videos, the workouts, the replays. I mean, you can read the form and you can get an idea of what you think you might like, but then you have to actually see the video, and then you can kind of verify your initial impression or maybe change your mind. And that's the fun part of preparing for this the situation that, you know, all the races and the 2-day festival. And as a gambler or as a horse player, you go in there thinking that, you know, you want to be as prepared as you can be.
What are some of your initial impressions of the pre-entries?
Well, I haven't really gotten quite into the Euros yet. That's something I'll do once I figure out who gets entered, you know.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised that we didn't have a little bit more strength in that in all the divisions. I may change my mind once I do the research, but I thought the turf, I thought we'd get a little bit better representation from Europe than we did in that. The mile looks pretty good. I think Circus Maximus is going to be tough to beat in that race, but you know, he's not the very best that they have. It's hard to tell about the 2-year-old grass races until I, you know, get the video and start diving in. So that was I won't say disappointing, but I thought we, you know, the thing about this year's Breeders' Cup is that we don't really have a marquee performer to hang our hat on, which is, you know, on the one end, it's a little disappointing, but on the other hand, hey, let's make one then. You know, let's find one. And, of course, with Horse of the Year still up for grabs, we can always grab onto that. If you're, you know, if you're covering the sport, if you're interested in the sport, then that's something you can look forward to as well.
I want to ask you, as a regular, you know, and long established watcher of conditions out there, how are you adjusting to, and how are you going to approach the way this main track is in terms of, you know, how slow it is? And we talked about it already since the beginning of the meet. How are you going to factor that in to the main track races and horses that are going to ship in basically on top of the races?
Well, I'm going to be very suspect about horses that don't have at least a race or a workout over the track. It's not so much that they need it, although I do think they would benefit from it, because, as you point out, this is a very deep and tiring track. Now, I believe it is safe. I honestly do believe that. But it's going to take some getting used to if you're a trainer, because you don't really know how fit you have to have your horse to run, especially in the distance races. So I'm going to be approaching this. Now, I won't say I'll demand that a race over a track or a workout, but I'm sure going to lean towards horses that have had that benefit. And that's why I think that trainers who are going to ship in and run on the dirt, grass is different, obviously, but if you run on the dirt, you know, it's going to be tough. I think you're putting your horse into a little bit of a disadvantage.
I would tend to agree. And the fact that Steve Asmussen got in early, Dale Roman's in relatively early, Dallas Stewart has stayed there with Seeking the Soul after the Del Mar try and a race at Santa Anita. And I just think, you know, getting over that surface, it's got to be a positive that, you know, horses are out there every day on it.
Yeah, Midnight Bisou, for example, she got here. She's been here almost a month, you know, and obviously Steve is, you know, he wants to make sure that everything, all the boxes are checked, and she's been breezing here. So, I mean, not that needs, she necessarily needs the edge, but she has it if it's important. So one of several. You look at some of the other horses that have come out here and not only trained here, but, you know, even had a race. I think that's important as well. And, you know, I'm thinking about even in the sprint, you know, I don't know whether he's going to be good enough, but Chance Lott had a nice effort over the Sanity the Sprint Championship back in early October, and he ran like a horse that really would benefit from having an outing. I think that last furlong kind of got to him, but he won't have that excuse, and if he's ever going to be able to win a race like this, it's going to be under these conditions. So I'm looking forward to isolating those horses and then figuring out whether I want to go with them or not.
Well, and speaking of which, because we didn't talk last week, what was your reaction to Mandela opting for the Dirt Mile with Omaha Beach?
Well, initially I was surprised because when you're going a mile on this track, it's a relatively short run of the clubhouse turn, and you know you're always putting your horse in a position of maybe getting stuck way out and maybe even losing your best chance before the race even starts, you know. And the sprint, I mean, he had just sprinted. He didn't have to do any more than what he had just did over the track. The mile and a quarter, I knew that was going to be out because there was just no way he could have a horse ready to go a mile and a quarter on this track off that one sprint. But I do think in retrospect, and I understand why they're doing it, they kind of figured out that maybe the mile might not be as difficult or as contentious as the sprint, and I think that they're probably right. I mean, Matoli's going to be in the sprint, and you got a few others in there that are really good. And the mile, you know, I looked at the field, and I mean, there's some nice horses in there for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you look at the contenders, but I don't think if you're the people who are behind Omaha Beach, I don't think you really have to worry about anybody other than yourself. I mean, if Omaha Beach, and I watched him train since his comeback win, and he looks fine to me. I mean, in fact, he looks better than he looked before the San Diego Sprint Championship, other than the last work that he had, which was sharp in 46 right before the race. But I'm looking at this field, and this looks to me like, yeah, you know something? I think they did the right thing. And I think, you know, especially since it's a natural springboard from the sprint to the mile, he certainly can go two turns. We know that's not going to be an issue. And then the field may not be such that an outside post would bother him even if he got one. So I think they did the right thing, and it's something that I would not have done, and now that I look back, they're smarter than I am because I think they made the right call.
Well, and, you know, they're talking about following up Breeders' Cup with a Malibu run and then the stretch out to a mile and an eighth in the Pegasus as a three-race string for Omaha Beach. So we'll leave it in Richard Mandela's very capable hands.
Yeah, right? No, I think Richard, he's kind of thinking, I'd like to win this race, and I'd like to win the Malibu, and I'd like to win the Pegasus, and if I do that, he'll be retired. So,
well, that's it.
He's kind of got mixed emotions on that. I know that he's scheduled to go to stud, but it's not etched in stone that he has to be retired and miss his four-year-old season. And really, when you look at a horse like that, I mean, you'd certainly like to see him fulfill his racing potential and train on as a four-year-old as opposed to pulling the plug if he does finish out in the flourish. But it's business, you know, and I kind of see it. But, you know, I remember when Richard was training Into Mischief and he was just starting to get good as a four-year-old and they retired him, and I scratched my head on that. And I said, what are they doing that for? I mean, why don't we let him be a four-year-old? Well, it turned out he's an incredible stallion. So, again, they made the right call on that one, but it would have been nice to see in a Mischief train on, and it would be nice to see Omaha Beach do the same if given the chance, if he finishes out, you know, this career as the connections are hoping that he will.
Well, we will save the serious and intense Breeders' Cup conversation with Jeff for next week. In the meantime, xbtv.com for all the analysis. Jeff and Zoe and Millie Ball, all the videos you could possibly want under each heading of the 14 races. You can watch the horses work. Just it's all there for you, and take advantage. Let's, Jeff, in the meantime, turn our attention toward the weekend. We'll talk about Saturday in a second, and a terrific autumn miss. There is a race today. It's just a 5-horse field, but it has a couple of horses that I've liked from the start of her career. Gary Sherlock, with the $500,000 earning Show It and Mow It, the cowbred. She's really been consistent and nice. And I see that Sheriff springs back Hard Not to Love in this spot. And this one flashed immediate ability earlier in the year, and then had a good 4 or 5 months off. The hard-spun filly, and I'm not even getting to the favorite, Anaket, for Bob Baffert.
Yeah, this is the goes to the seventh race today at Santa Anita. It's a pretty salty two other than sprint, only five going, but you mentioned some of the main contenders, including Anaket, who came off a layoff and earned a 96 buyer number when winning a first-level allowance. That's a stakes number, and she's actually undefeated because she won her debut very impressively last December. Then with 50 cents on the dollar and a first-level allowance going a mile, looked like she was going to be an Oaks-type filly, being by Pioneer of the Nile. And she stumbled badly at the start, lost the rider, and then disappeared for about 9 months. Came back earlier this month and won a very good allowance race. And I can't even believe that she wasn't the favorite in the race. She was actually 5-2. And just galloped. Comes back relatively quick in 19 days, which kind of surprises me. That's not usually Bob's style, but she did have a breeze the other day, so obviously she's doing well. And she is 4-5 on the morning line. Now, Hard Not to Love won her first two starts. She's a hard-spun filly, John Sheriff's train. Then was a distant third in the Angel Flight back in early May. She was favored that day. Obviously, something happened to her that day. She didn't break that well, and they stopped on her. She's training really well for her comeback. And then you mentioned Show It and Mow It is a really hard-knocking cowbred filly who's made close to $500,000. She was fourth in the L.A. Woman last time out. And then another filly who's, I think, pretty good, and it's a mischief filly. I don't think she's quite up to this level yet, but Nata Vestal is a lightly raced in a mischief filly that's never been worse than second in five starts, and a little slower on the speed figures than the others, but she's been training really well as well. This is a two other than allowance sprint. I mean, there are $300,000 stakes that aren't this tough. So we'll see what happens today at a good seventh race feature today at Santa Anita.
You know, one thing that's interesting looking at this group, and to go back to Hard Not to Love for a second, because I'm a little surprised, and I guess off the layoff, John Sheriffs has to bring her back a little bit at a time. But this is a filly that certainly they've got to expect to stretch out. This is the half sister to Wonder Godot.
Yeah, no, I mean that was the plan, and I think they did everything right. I mean, they started out sprinting, and she did that, and they stretched her out, not stretched her out, but they moved her up to 6.5 to win that. And then they ran her 7/8 in the stake, and then that was, she obviously got hurt in that race. And then there's always grass, a heart-spun filly. I mean, there's a lot of options there. And I think what John did is he said, look, I'm going to be conservative. We've given her some time. We'll bring her back. We'll run her in this second-level allowance. How tough can it be? And then we'll get, maybe we'll stretch her out of Del Mar and then into the winter. But if you're going to run against this group of horse, this type of horse like Anaket and the rest of these, you would rather do it the stake than a second level allowance. So it's a good race. It makes an otherwise moderate Friday program look pretty interesting.
Let's look at Saturday and get a couple of opinions, and we'll talk about the autumn miss in a second. Jeff Siegel with us, Jay Siegel Racing on Twitter, and of course xbtv.com. The fourth race, I want to bring this race up, mostly first time starters. You do have Sheriffs with a serious player in here, the Honor Code Colt. They're going 6.5. Thunder Code, this is out of the nice Tarlow, and certainly with two races under the belt and having been beaten by American Theorem, and then second to Great Power in the last try at the end of September. But There's some really notable babies in here. Baffert unveils the Albaugh's 1,000 Words, who was a million-dollar yearling at Keeneland last year, the pioneer of the Nile out of Pomeroy's Pistol, who herself was a multiple-graded stake winner. How about the $500,000 Friars Road for Michael McCarthy? It's funny, bred by Bob and Luana Lowe, but purchased by Mr. Warren and his wife. So in the familiar pink silks. This is got the makings of a heady and important maiden race.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of really promising colts in the fourth race here on Saturday. A very, very promising. You know, you never know with these maiden races. Sometimes they come up with one horse that can run in them. Sometimes they come up with three or four. This one is a, you got Thundercoat, as you mentioned, in the money in both of his starts with improving buyer numbers. That's a honor code colt, as you mentioned. It's got the benefit of a couple of runs. But 1,000 Words, his name is 1,000 Words, 1,000 Words. He draws the outside post, which is good. $1 million yearling by Pioneer of the Nile. He's done everything right in the morning. Looks like a really quality colt. Used to be in the morning when the track was fast that these are the kind of horses that would work in 58 and 2 and 111 and change. But Bob doesn't do that anymore. It's a deep track. I mean, he does have a 46 and 4 work back in late September, so he has been allowed to, you know, to run on in the morning pretty good. But Bob has gotten away with this idea of wanting and having to win first time out. He does that unbelievably well, 41%. But he doesn't train him quite as hard as he used to, thinking that they're probably going to need one anyway. So I'm not sure how 100% cranked up 1,000 Words is going to be, but he is 2-1 in the morning line for a reason. A couple other nice colts in here that are making their debuts. Mike McCarthy's got a couple of them that have been training well. Friars Road and Rushy, they've been training together, actually. Friars Road is a quality road colt. Rushy is a Liam's Map colt, so both are beautifully bred. Rushy is the cheaper of the two. He only brought $70,000 in the two-year-old sale, but he's a pretty quick colt. I think he's a little quicker than Friars Road. At least that's what I've seen in the morning. So I think those are two colts that are going to be intriguing for me. Baffert's got another colt in there, a $500,000 two-year-old in training purchase named Ra'ad. That's a colt by Twirling Candy, who's done some good work as well. So it's a very interesting race. I think down the road, 1,000 Words is going to be the best of the group. I'll see if he's ready to win right off the bat. Otherwise, the experience might pay off for Thunder Code, who's, again, had those two runs. And he's a nice colt himself.
Let's dive into the Autumn Miss, the Grade 3 going a flat mile. And there are more three-year-old restricted Philly turf races in this country maybe than any other division. It's unbelievable. It's like every week around the country, it seems that there's a three-year-old Philly turf race.
Well, and this is a Grade 3, but it looks like a Grade 2 or even a Grade 1.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Grade one, but it's got a Grade one filly in it for sure in Hidden Message, and this goes as the seventh tomorrow at Santa Anita. The Autumn Miss Grade three. It's only $100,000, and I say only because a lot of places around the country you're running maidens for $90. But this is a good race. Hidden Message, a very good second in the Del Mar Oaks in her U.S. debut for Simon Callahan. Finishing very, very well behind Cambier Park, who we know is a Grade 1 filly for sure. And then Lady Prancelot was behind her in that race, and she's come back and won stakes since then. So that was a very tough, live, legitimate Grade 1 Del Mar Oaks that Hidden Message comes out of, and she really did run well to be second. She was a listed stakes winner at Sandown back in July, so she's here. And this is a filly that, again, I won't say she's slumming. That's not really fair, but I would have expected them to maybe look at the QE2 at Keeneland. And obviously, Simon decided to keep her here. But good filly and good draw. Pratt rides her back, and she's the one to beat. And there's a number of other nice fillies in here as well that are maybe Grade 2 types. But Hidden Message, it looks to me like she's really something that we're going to hear about. Again, a daughter of Scat Daddy. She's going to be a filly that's going to be heard from in big-time races next year.
You know who's being heard from on a regular basis, and I'd like your opinion of when to bet him. He's 0 for the meet right now. But Jonathan Wong is making his way. He's the latest Golden Gate and going back Bay Meadows, the most recent Bay Area trainer to make the foray down to Southern California. How do you approach Jonathan Wong and his runners that he sends down?
Well, at Golden Gate, he wins everything. Let's face it. I mean, I think he's he's a good trainer. He works hard and all that. But he gets a lot of Southern California shippers that guys just want to unload, so he gets a chance to run them cheap, and he wins a lot of races that way, which is good. Now, he has not had anywhere near the same success shipping down here. Now, that might be a function of a tougher circuit. It also might be a function of training up at Golden Gate Fields on the all-weather and then coming down here and running in the very deep tracks of Del Mar and Santa Anita. He doesn't really have the quality horses that he can run on grass, so he's stuck running most of his horses on the dirt, and it's tough. And I think he's kind of learning what to do and how to get horses ready and where to run them down here. You can't run a short horse down here, and, you know, he's a claiming trainer, so therefore claiming trainers usually don't train them very hard because they want to save their claiming horses for the afternoon. So I think he's a good trainer. I think he's adjusting, but his win percentage up north is close to 30%, and down here it's not even half that. So I'm watching. I still think he's a good trainer. I'll still back his horses if I like where they're, you know, where they're placed. But up north, it's almost a no-brainer. Here, you really have to evaluate his horses.
Well, and the one he's got in here seems like she could be okay. Keeper of the Stars. I'm going to expect that 5-1 actually floats north. She's going to, you know, try to win on the front end. And, you know, there is some other pressure. I guess Giza Goddess is going to go for Sheriffs. You know, there isn't a ton though of you know on the engine fillies in here.
No, and this is a very fast filly by Midnight Lute, who actually ran very well in the Del Mar Oaks herself. She didn't get the lead that day, and she still hung on to be fourth, beaten three lengths over a mile and an eighth. This is a mile. So Keeper of the Stars is definitely dangerous. If she gets loose on the lead and they don't pressure her, and she can get that half mile in less than, you know, somewhere around 47 and change or 47 or maybe 46 and big change, she might be tough to catch. I saw her race up north. She won very nicely. She got hooked in the turn, and she shook off the pace presser, which obviously is not the same quality that she's going to see here. And, she's a nice filly. She's a very nice filly. Jerry Hollenhofer had her, and obviously that situation dictated that Keeper of the Stars was moved to a different barn, and Jonathan Wong picked her up, and, yeah, she's definitely a threat if she can get loose.
Well, and Mucho Unusual, who I took a shine to for Tim Yakteen, speaking of Millie Ball,
yeah.
Mucho Unusual in here as well. Very nice, and tried to go a mile and an eighth, gets back to what might be her preferred trip, and she's tactical. And at 6-1, that's who I like.
And she's 2-for-2 at Santa Anita on this course. And this
there you go.
You know, this is a unique turf course in a sense because very, very glib, very fast, kind of like running on a pool tabletop. And you have to be able to quicken and accelerate, especially in a big field, and she does have that ability. She has to prove that she's quite up to this level. I thought that maybe she was exposed just a tad in the Del Mar Oaks in a grade one, but again, when you're in your team, you figure, okay, that's fine. We'll go to a grade. We'll drop down to a grade three. That's her level, and then all of a sudden, Hidden Message shows up. So, again, it's tough, but she'll lay her body down because Mucho Unusual always does. She always gives everything she has.
As does Jeff Siegel. And Jeff, before we go, is tomorrow the day for Stretford End, who really feels like a career maiden? Kaleem Shah, and it was cut out to be a nice horse, has run into, you know, plenty of nice ones along the way, including Improbable right in his debut, who he lost to by a neck. Is he ever going to break his maiden?
Is he ever going to break his maiden? I would say, yeah, I think somewhere down the road he's going to break his maiden. Whether or not,
may not be today,
I don't know, but it's, you know, he's, the one thing I'll say with him, you know, he tries hard, you know, and he, you know, he seems like he tries hard, but he just can't seem to close, seal the deal. So I'm not sure if he's a gamble anymore for me. I've tried him enough to know that I'm not sure whether he can beat a good horse or not. Whether or not he has to beat one, you know, in the race, I'm not sure. But I hope he wins one eventually. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. Certainly, you know, I love how Kaleem Shah names all the soccer, a lot of his horses with the soccer connections. That's what old Trafford is. So I root for Kaleem Shah. He's put a lot into the game, and this one, I don't know. I don't know if it's tomorrow though, because Soldier Boy for Sadler looks tough. Jeff, anything else? Any Keeneland? Any Belmont? Anything else caught your eye?
Very, very much interested in seeing how Maximum Security runs tomorrow in the Bull Ruler. They're taking the path of least resistance, which I don't think is a bad thing. I wish he was out here. He's not ready, I guess. That's what they're telling us. But he's running against older horses in a pretty good graded stakes. Maybe he could have been out here doing something, either in the sprint or the mile. But want to see how he performs. He's tackling older horses. We'll see if that's going to impact him or not. He's got the rail on the Bold Ruler, and he's got a pretty salty horse on the outside, an older horse named Prince Lucky, who's very good at Belmont. So that's an interesting race. Also looking forward to the Awad. There's a colt in there named Tiesto who looked pretty good at this. Now colt broke his maiden first time out. He runs on the grass, even though he's got a dirt pedigree, so maybe in due time he'll do that. And then, of course, at Keeneland in the Fayette, kind of curious to see if Mr. Freeze can shake loose in the inside draw going a mile and eighth. I remember his win in the West Virginia Derby just blew my mind, and he never really ran back to that, but it looks like he's rounding back into that top form for Dale Romans, and if he can get loose on from his inside draw at Keeneland going a mile and eighth, he might be able to steal that race. So good racing tomorrow, kind of like the calm before the storm. Get our feet wet, and then we go to work. That's going to be fun.
Without a doubt, Jeff, I will see you as early as Sunday at Santa Anita, and either way, we'll be together at some point during the week. I'll be broadcasting from Clocker's Corner. Good luck this weekend. It is a very good card tomorrow, then the action will really, really ratchet up and the intensity next week. Thanks.
Sounds good. I'll see you then.
Jeff Siegel, everybody. Ed DeRosa standing by, and we'll get to Ed right now. Ed, good morning. Eddie?
I'm here.
There we go. Good morning.
How are you?
Excellent, excellent. Been busy, and we'll get right to it. First of all, your pre-entry reactions.
I have to say, try not to get the cart too far ahead of the horse. I'm definitely a proponent of waiting for the final draw, just the manner of how I handicap and seeing everything in the actual program order. But this is the first year I can remember in a while, Steve, that I'm pretty excited to bet against some obvious favorites. And I've learned the hard way at times as a public handicapper that connections of these horses can take that personally, and it's certainly no disrespect to accomplished horses like Midnight Bizou and Omaha Beach that I'm going to play against them to win. But at the expected prices in the races they chose to enter, I just don't see either is that much of a standout. So those are two races I'm really targeting. Typically a horizontal player that I think I'm going to have to get involved in the verticals. But I have my favorites too. Sister Charlie, of course, Price gets aided by Magical, likely tackling her in the Philly and Mare Turf. And the Classic, I think we'll see as flat as a board as we've seen in a while in that race with, a couple choices that people are going to lean to, McKinsey, et cetera, but plenty of other options if you want to get creative. So there's some places to zig and zag. Sister Charlie, I can't imagine, won't be the one I lean on most, but I really think my wagering is going to center around beating those two favorites I mentioned earlier.
I'm hearing a lot of that, and there's going to be opportunity. Kafefi is going to be, there's going to be anti-Kafefi. There's going to be, I know that the Dennis's Moment situation is a little different, but I'm sure there'll be people that are going to, try to figure out a way to, go elsewhere. To me, it seems like the two principals and, the two A's and the two B players, they're pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, I love. What's your take so far?
Yeah, and the juvenile is one of those races you sort of struggle with for me as a horizontal player, because I feel like you can cover it with three horses, Eight Rings, Dennis's Moment, and Maxfield. Like, if one of them loses, then you might, in my mind,
right,
use them
right.
all. But it's a pari-mutuel game, and a lot of people are playing it that way. So even if you get Maxfield home, let's say, as the third choice at 4-1, is he going to play 4-1 in the Maltese, especially if a favorite wins around them? Probably not. So race order is key here. You know, they announced it on Wednesday, and to me, looking at the races around it, and if you think you can get a $20, $30, $50 horse, then, yeah, use all three, because why get beat if you have a strong opinion on a price? But if you're finding yourself narrow around the juvenile, I think it's almost worth picking the one you like most and gambling a little bit and allow yourself a chance at a bigger payday.
Well, we'll do it all next week with you and James. And before we talk about any plays today and the weekend, Ed, lay out the coverage at Twin Spires and at Brisnet.
Yeah, well, we brought back our handicapping package this year. That's something we've heard from people that's kind of, hey, I, you know, buy a bunch of stuff. It's the Breeders' Cup, and just looking for a little break on that. So I encourage people to check that out. It's $20. Includes the pre-entries, includes the full card PPs. And one thing we added this year, to the chagrin of some, because it's typically been free, but I just made the push at the office, Steve. What Kelly Riley does with her international scouting report, I think is on par with what Pete and Carrie do with their patterns of motion analysis, the work she puts into it. And I have no shame in finding a dollar value that if people feel that it's worth the information, which I absolutely do, we're encouraging people to buy the product this year. So that will be available, but it is for sale, but it is a part of the handicapping package. So if you're getting the PPs anyway, you can still get her report as part of that. And if you want it a la carte, it'll be $10, and it's available on Monday. But Kelly is an oracle when it comes to international racing, and not only the European racing, but how it fits with the Americans, which is really how you're wagering next week at the Breeders' Cup. It's how they fit with these runners. And really looking forward to what she's putting together next week, and hopefully people will check it out.
No doubt that the $10 would be well spent, given, you know, the depth now of the European participation. When you're talking, you know, when you're talking about four races on Saturday and three on Friday, I would say that.
Right, and it's horse by horse. It's not just okay, here's what we think in this race,
exactly,
and then move on. Yeah, it's in depth and quality reading. I mean, she's a good writer and researcher, so it's solid.
Let's turn then, Ed, to some action. Anything today before we go to Saturday?
Yeah, I know we'll get to Best of Ohio tomorrow, but I do have to say today I really like What a Fox in the ninth race, stepping up to Allowance Company after two straight claiming races. But it just seems like horses is finally going in the right direction, seemed to have some buzz as a two-year-old, took money at Saratoga, has been tinkered with, seen a few different trainers, and now you get a guy who's really sharp off the claim. So a lot of positive signs for me. I doubt we'll get 8-1. Just too good a form right now, but don't think she'll be the favorite. And I'm on her big time in the ninth at Keeneland today.
Very nice. Let's turn to Saturday. You mentioned Best of Ohio, and I knew that it would be irresistible. And in fact, at the top of the show, Ron Paolucci, Luch, the undisputed king of Ohio. Well, him and Tim Ham. I think they'd have to have a jousting match. But Ronnie said, are you having Ed for Best of Ohio? I said, you bet.
You know it. And speaking of Tim, yeah, he has a first-time starter today, whose name I'm drawing a blank on, but was 6-1 on the morning line, who I thought looked interesting training at Presque Isle and then shows up on debut here rather than in Ohio. So Take a long look at that one today at Keeneland for Tim. But, yeah, Mahoning opens today, Best of Ohio tomorrow. The pick four is races 5, 6, 7, and 8. So race 6 is the sprint, and Altissimo, probably the most likely winner all day anywhere. You know, I always, it's kind of, I don't mean to be blue when I say this, but it's one of those situations where you would worry if the horse didn't win. So pick four might be dicey to play with such a big favorite, but I do like a couple prices in the late double. The Best of Ohio Distaff is race 7. Magna Rose is who I picked on top, because she's handled a route before, and I love that the Best of Ohio Distaff a mile and an eighth and not a mile and a 16th. So that extra half furlong, definitely a test for Ohio bred. And third off the layoff with proven efforts going long, I do think Magna Rose is interesting. But numbers 4 and 5 are two I'm also going to be using with Altissimo, looking for prices. They're 10 and 15 to 1, so 4, 5, 6 for me in race 7. And then race 8, speaking of going long, the Endurance, it's a mile and a quarter. And I think Indian Fever has a big shot to steal it on the front end. Mahoning Valley, a track I actually do play, as many probably know, Monday and Tuesday especially, has that sort of pattern where you either win on the front end or you come from the clouds. It's just not the type of place where the middle moves seem to do well. So for me, Indian Fever on the front end, I think, is really dangerous. He's 6-1 on the morning line, plenty of two-turn experience. Has never gone this far, but pedigree, you know, especially the pedigree relative to the others, says he should be capable of doing so. So Indian Fever for me in the Endurance, Steve.
Excellent. How about some Keeneland? You got the two races maybe as part of the cross country, the 8th and 9th, maybe Bold Ruler as well, New York?
The only Saturday I did was was Best of Ohio, and
how about actually, that? Look at that! I love it.
I said,
that's
I'm
great.
I'm gonna be ready. Yeah, I'm the Buckeye. I don't know how many regulars or others are Buckeyes. Luch, I guess, but wanted to be ready. And so, real quick, in the 2-year-old races, which are races 4 and 5,
sure.
Moonlit Mission handled the stretch out last time. That's number 8, and that was against open runners. Now, granted, this is a stakes, but still open allowance for 2-year-olds. And now backward state breds just seems poised here for top connections. And then in race 5, which is the juvenile, it's official, was my pick there. Liberate's going to be a short price. They tried the sapling, which I appreciate, them shipping to Monmouth and taking a go against open company. And at a really short price here, Steve, I'll just play that the horse might need some more time off after that. It was just a really off race, and that one's going the wrong way. Maybe it's official can pick up the pieces.
Excellent. All right.
That's what I got. But, yeah, looking forward to closing it out at Keeneland and opening things up at Churchill for Breeders' Cup Week.
Well, and the opening card Sunday we talked about already with James Scully early. Really good way to start the season Sunday. And are you doing a bet share on Sunday at Belmont with the Empire 6?
We will be, yes.
Tell people how to do that?
Yeah, if you want to get into mine, follow me on Twitter. We'll put the link up. But more importantly, bet share is an opportunity for anyone to play their own ticket and share it with people. If you're on TwinSpires, you play your bet, and instead of submitting it, you click share bet, and then you get a link you can send out, and people can buy in for 5%, 10%, whatever you set. So a lot of fun, a good way to keep the accounting within the computer and not have to worry about Venmo and all that, and a lot of fun to win with friends.
Absolutely. It is fun, and just a way to, you know, way to be involved in some of the action.
Exactly.
Ed, I see you next week.
You
am I seeing you out there? No.
The streak is broken. Yeah.
That's all right.
That's right. I'll be at Churchill. The big board.
There you go. There you go. That'll be fun. Ed DeRosa, everybody. EJXD2. And there is a benefit, Ed. There is a benefit, which is that you get to be home for Halloween with the kids. So that's
exactly
positive. Right.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah. We got Mario, JoJo Siwa, And I'm not sure who EJ is going to be yet. But Buzz Lightyear, I think we decided on.
Nice. Very nice. I love it. Good job. Ed, thank you.
Thank you.
We've got about 4 or 5 minutes, and I wanted to get to Dr. Hammerly, paging Dr. Hammerly, for just a quick hello. And we'll see. Hammer will be out in California Thursday and Friday next week. Hammer.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm good. How the students? Did anybody?
You know, after the end of the third week, I feel like I'm one of the faculty now. I feel much better, much more relaxed, very cool, and actually developing a little rapport with everybody. And so we're telling stories, we're doing all kinds of things. So it's gonna be cool. It's gonna turn out just fine. And what the beautiful part is, you know, next Friday is Breeders' Cup Day, and when I said I got to go, and they, well, Friday, that's a holiday here. What are you kidding me? There's no school on Friday. It's Breeders' Cup Day for the program here, so you got to appreciate that.
Oh, big time, big time! Yeah, and we're going to see you. We'll see you Thursday, Friday, right?
Yeah, I'm coming in Wednesday afternoon, and we'll be out there bright and early with you Thursday and Friday morning. I can't wait. It's actually very different for me, not being a part of, you know, A, going through the selection thing, but B, not being, you know, at Santa Anita and being there. So totally looking at it from a totally different perspective. I'm there to gamble at this point and make the score. So I'm very happy to be doing that. So I'm going over my. I don't have any influences. People aren't walking in the office with this and that, so it's good. So this has a initial look of, you know, not a whole lot jumping out right now. So those are the kind of years where you really have to, you know, rely on your own source and resources, and not, like I've heard you say it all week, don't jump in too soon, don't lock in too soon. So I'm going to gather stuff, see how the information comes, see how many Europeans end up entering before I, you know, start, you know, circling a couple of horses that aren't even going to show up. But getting some ideas. This is every time this year I think of Sheik Al Abdou, and this is 1991 Breeders' Cup, and you know, my wife, we were at the Meadowlands, but we were betting, and she liked Sheik Al Abdou, and I talked her off of Sheik Al Abdou. And, of course, the horse won and paid some. So I always think of that. When you get your selections done and you do the work and you do your homework, do not let anybody talk you off your horse. This is one of those years that so many races are so wide open. Do your deal. As a matter of fact, I just watched the replay of Sheik Al Abdou because I kind of forgot the scene. But Housebuster was in that race, and he rolled by him at the eighth pole, and interesting enough, who finished second in that race, here's a little quiz for you. The same horse that finished second in the Breeders' Cup Sprint in 1991 finished second in the Breeders' Cup Classic in 1992, which is pretty wild. Pleasant Tap.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you get in trouble when you watch one film and all of a sudden you start looking stuff up and you're going all over. So, and I end up watching the 92 with AP Indy and Pleasant Tap finishing second, but I don't think you're going to see a horse out there that's ever going to finish second in the sprint one year and the classic the next year. It won't happen too soon. But anyway, it's one of those years, I think, where, you know, your opinion's going to be just as good as the guy sitting next to you. So, you know, trust yourself, do your homework, and go with it. As you've heard, I've listened all week, when you've talked to everyone, and a lot of different opinions out there, I'll tell you. You had Nick Tamer on yesterday morning, and he kept going and going and going. And finally, he ended. I sent him a text. I said, "Thanks for pulling up. I had to get out of my car. I couldn't stop listening. I was stuck in my car listening." He said, "Thanks
I love
for
it.
Stopping." But he does a great job. But you know, pick your people, watch a lot of film, and you know, trust yourself. You're going to be right. You know, so
absolutely.
Really looking forward to it.
I am as well. I'll see you on Thursday. I'll talk to you before that, of course, but I will talk to everybody Monday from Clocker's Corner. I want to thank Nick Tamaro, James Scully, Mike Beer, Hammer, Brian Sanfratello, Jeff Siegel, Ed DeRosa, Casey and Deja back at the studio, and yesterday's files are fixed, specifically that that section that includes Nick's piece and the first nine races, and then we discuss the next five. Best of luck today, Benji Hernandez, for us, and Kid Chocolate in the nightcap. Good luck to all of you. Whatever you're playing this weekend, there's a ton to choose from. HRRN coverage here on Sirius XM, 3 o'clock, and then tomorrow you've got Equine Forum, you've got Bill Finley and Dave Johnson and company as well at 10 o'clock down the stretch. I'll talk to you Monday at Santa Anita.